Of the many questions yet to be answered in the Marathon bombing investigation, maybe the toughest one. It's why. 19-year-old Jahar Tsarnaev reportedly told investigators that his now-deceased brother Tamerlan planned the bombings and recruited him only recently. Family members have said Tamerlan started to adopt extremist religious views in recent years, and they describe a mysterious man named Misha, who they say influenced him. We want to bring in Steve Hassan. He's author of Freedom of Mind, Helping Loved Ones Leave Controlling People, Cults, and Beliefs. In the 1970s, he was drawn into Sun Myung-moon's Unification Church, and he now helps people break away from cults. Steve, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you, Sasha.
And Steve, as you know, our colleague Robin Young knew the younger bombing suspect, Jahar. Her nephew went to high school with him. And every report from students and teachers who've been interviewed is the same. They all say that Jahar was a popular, high-achieving kid. He seemed completely assimilated into American society. And that got us wondering if he may be the first suspect in this kind of attack to be so seemingly well-adjusted.
Well, I remember back to John Walker Lynn, the American Taliban, who converted to Islam here in the United States, wound up going to, I believe, Pakistan and changed his name a second time, his Arab name, and became radicalized. So I think for me, I was recruited when I was 19 years old, and it took 2 weeks for me to drop out of my college, quit my job, donate my bank account, and believe the Messiah was on the earth. It took me, I'd say, another year before I was willing to die or kill on command. But I can tell you in 36 years as a therapist, people who very intelligent, educated people from good families can be deceptively recruited and indoctrinated into something totally against their value system.
So it doesn't have to just be someone who's a loner or who seems disaffected?
Not at all. I wasn't. I was an extra honors student and popular and was not interested in joining a group. My girlfriend dumped me and three attractive women flirted and then it was history.
So when we come back after a break, we're going to talk more with Steve about some of the work he's done and about some of the techniques he's used to help people leave extremist religious groups and cults. And he's going to be talking to us about how these kind of techniques can be applied to this case of the Boston Marathon suspects, the Boston Marathon bombing suspects. Again, Steve Hassan, author of Freedom of Mind, Helping Loved Ones Leave Controlling People, Cults, and Beliefs. We will be back after a short break. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Steve Hassan. He's an expert in cults, and he's written books about how people are recruited into them and then drawn back out of them. And we're talking to him about how his work connects with the suspects in the Boston Marathon bombing case. And Steve, there are lots of theories about how these two young men got involved in this. Some law enforcement officials have said that Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older brother, may have been self-radicalized by reading jihadist websites. But can you give us an overview of how people tend to be recruited into groups like this or activities like this?
Sure. I would say overwhelmingly, it's person-to-person recruitment as opposed to just on the internet. I think internet recruitment does happen. I've had a few cases like that, but overwhelmingly, it's a person. And typically, there's a seduction in the sense of love bombing and flattery and tell me all about you.
Love bombing, just sort of flood someone with your soul.
Oh, Sasha, you're so special. You're so smart and you're so pretty and that the world needs you. And then in the case of Islamism, perhaps, you know, what do you think about America, a country that says it's about democracy, holding people in Guantanamo Bay without even a trial? Or what do you think about drones killing women and children? So, how do you feel about that, Sasha? And getting the person to feel guilty, like it's their responsibility, making them feel special. And it's an incremental indoctrination. In other words, no one intentionally joins a destructive cult. It's a step-by-step drawing out information from the person, maybe isolating them if they can, sleep deprivation if possible, dietary manipulation. I have a model I call the BITE model of mind control. It describes four components: behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. And I say basically any authoritarian personal relationship or group that uses these four components to make someone dependent and obedient on them. So the locus of control for their life is with another person or a group or an ideology is a destructive mind control thing.
So a very gradual, deliberate grooming process.
And it can also be very fast. I've seen people almost instantly hypnotized where they felt like, oh, they met their soulmate. Turns out that was a cult recruiter. Or they had just been praying that morning for God to show them a sign of what to do with their life, and somebody knocks on the door and wants to share the Bible with them. And it's a misattribution effect or a mystical manipulation experience where people do not understand what's going to happen next, what's going to happen next, what's going to happen next. And ultimately what happens is a cult identity is formed that suppresses the person's real self. And this cult identity typically has phobias installed that if you leave the group or even question the group, terrible things are going to happen to you. So in the case of religious cults, you're going to go to hell or demons are going to possess you or such. And as silly as it may sound, I actually was taken to see the Exorcist movie in 1974 when I was in the cult. And my cult leader said, God made this movie. And this movie was a prophecy of what would happen to people who left the Unification Church. And I believed it.
Is there a certain demographic or age group considered particularly vulnerable, like young males, or is it really equal opportunity?
You know, I used to say 30 years ago it was the 18 to 24-year-olds, but now that the baby boomers are in their 50s, I'd say it's the baby boomers is where I'm hearing about most of my clients.
Is that like a midlife searching process?
Midlife, exactly. Divorce. They've done their career. They're not happy. They're not satisfied. They want to have meaning. And when people say, oh, people are weak or they're hollow and that's why they are susceptible to a cult, I don't buy that. I think people want to improve themselves. They want to make the world a better place, and they don't understand mind control. They don't understand that we are susceptible to social influence processes.
Steve Hassan, one of the points you make in your writings is that we need to anticipate that this can happen and find more ways to combat it. And you make the case that leaders in the Islamic community in the U.S. and abroad could be helping prevent these types of crimes, and there may be one way for them to try these crimes in Islamic courts. Is this sort of a new type of court system you're proposing be
well,
set up?
Well, I wish I could take credit, but Masoud Banisadr, a former Iranian MEK cult member, came up with this idea. He said after a civil trial, there should be a Sharia trial, and Islamic clerics should come in and basically try the person and say, you're going to hell, because the Quran explicitly states you should not harm women, children, elderly. And really, we need to think psychologically of how to prevent people from being recruited. And I'd like to see ex-jihadists come and give lectures on campuses at mosques and such. I'd like to see more people taught about how social influence works. My mentor, Phil Zimbardo, has something called the Heroic Imagination Project.
This is the Stanford professor.
Exactly, the Zimbardo prison study.
Famous study.
The famous study. He's now doing a project called the Heroic Imagination Project, where he's developed a curriculum that instills in people the fact that they have to take responsibility even if the group is doing bad things or if some authority figure is ordering you to do bad things. You have to take responsibility and listen to your conscience.
So the idea is on college campuses, for example, where you might have particularly vulnerable populations, mm-hmm. send counter-prevailing forces who can give the opposite message than recruiter types. Maybe.
Exactly. And we need to develop more resources on the internet as well to counter all this incredible conspiracy theories and paranoia and one world government fears. We need to really think using a complex systems approach on this matter. We also need to come up with a solution for families who see a loved one being radicalized to do something to help them.
Although sometimes it's the family member doing the radicalizing, possibly, as in the case of
the
Sarnia.
Yeah, but in this story, as I understand it, the father and the uncle saw him
right.
being brainwashed, according to their accounts, in which case we need to provide resources for loved ones. They're the early warning system that a terrorist is in the making, potentially.
So families have to be on the alert and willing and ready to step in.
And we need to develop resources to help these folks and help people get out of these extreme belief systems.
Steve Hassan of the Freedom of Mind Resource Center, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Sasha.
Monday on Here and Now, we'll talk to Ken Feinberg, who oversaw the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund. He's now in the same role for the victims of the Boston Marathon bombings. Also, a look at the Syrian Electronic Army. That's the group that said it hacked into the Twitter account of the Associated Press. That's Monday. News is next, Here and Now.